Thank you. It's great being here, both because of some familiar faces and a lot of unfamiliar faces. And it's the reason why I think that's so important to me is that, you know, when we come together in a large group like this, it's an indication to me of a lot of work that's been going on, a lot of organizing. And the more effective our organizing gets, the more repression we're going to be faced with. So the repression is actually an indication of our success, not just of our weakness. I think that's important because, you know, in laying the context for all of this, we come to realize that, you know, we're in an oppositional relationship to the government and its agencies when we are acting and committing our lives to a very different vision of what the world should be like. So that inevitably results in their flexing their power. So the question for us is, how do we increase our power in that kind of situation? Because of course, we're certainly outgunned, literally and figuratively. You know, we're in a much weaker position than the state and all of its apparatus. They've come by their power through acts of violence that go back hundreds of years. They've always been willing to utilize that violence. And we're actually coming at the human condition and our community in a different way with a different set of values that aren't about brutality. So that's sort of definitional about setting the stage that we're in. Their ability to frighten us is with the intent of disorganizing, of creating enough fear that people aren't willing to do the work that's necessary to come together in gatherings like this or in issues that involve confronting, you know, unrestrained police violence or any of the other issues that you can countenance. And a lot of people historically have committed themselves to that kind of political work. So today, if you look at our prisons, not only are we looking at, you know, a massive prison population of 2.4 million people, but we're looking at people in some cases whose commitment to their community or their politics have meant decades of imprisonment. And when you can see people like that not backing down from their commitment, that to me has to be part of our guiding principles, that we need to understand who they are and not allow the state to function in a way that separates them from us and their communities. And if you understand how to do that in a more long-term way, that those lessons are exactly what we're talking about employing in a period when the grand juries are subpoenaing people that we know or knocking on doors. So part of it is the mechanics of how we deal with it, but part of it is also understanding that the context in which we are doing this and the reasons we are doing it, because of a larger commitments, and the history is one that has antecedents. There are people who are locked up because of their political commitments for years, and that doesn't deter them or mean that they are going to change their minds about what they believe and are willing to fight for. So that's where we draw our hope. So getting to the issue of media more specifically, I just wanted to frame it in that way because people have been talking about it before, but, you know, the goal isn't to avoid conflict with the state, because if that's your goal, you're going to do the most compliant thing possible and live your life if you can, unless you're, you know, a black or brown person in the community, in which case your choices are somewhat significantly changed simply because of what you look like, or if you're an immigrant, or if you're a Muslim, or, you know, all these other groups that are targeted in a very specific and historical way. So, you know, how do we amplify And I think this is what the role of media is. How do we amplify our politics, the messaging, and our effectiveness? How do we increase our ability to mobilize and bring people together? And what role can media play in that context? And, you know, I think there's a lot of good examples. I think Richard was talking about the San Francisco 8 case, where the counter-messaging in a case that where the state essentially was intent on squeezing people to either get someone to cooperate or getting a quick and easy conviction on a case in which a cop was murdered in San Francisco in order to basically recriminalize the history of the Black Panther Party, to reinstill fear, all their post 9/11 stuff. The purpose of a media strategy was to actually raise a different set of issues. It was to talk about a history of COINTELPRO. It was to talk about a police arrest and torture of members of the Black Panther Party in New Orleans. It was about trying to set a very different stage in the public's mind about what were the issues that were in conflict. So on one hand, we could point to the history of government repression and the racism that was central to COINTELPRO's attack on the Black movement. In order to tell that more complex story, you have to figure out what your messaging is, and you have to figure out what some of the vehicles are of not only mobilizing ourselves, but starting to put a dent in the corporate media, which is carrying out the state strategy for them in the most mass way and certainly more effectively. So we've learned a lot of things through, you know, the development of indie media and our ability to create our own media, but then how to get it out becomes a big question, and how to message in a way that is, you know, driven by the commitment of the people being targeted in any given period of time. So in some cases, that becomes very complicated. I think a good example is, and I think Christian should speak to this, is, you know, the grand jury in the Northwest, there's been some great messaging around it. You know, websites went up pretty quickly. You know, people were humanized. The idea that, you know, this repression was political, it was directed at people who had a legitimate right to be in the streets and had something to say, all those kinds of things, that becomes key. You know, it may not seem obvious at first, but that's how we start this process of building and reframing in order that the state and its own media can't have the only say about what's going on. And so we have the power to do that. And that becomes a mobilizing tool. And as I mentioned, around the San Francisco 8 here in the Bay Area, that was part of a success in conjunction with, you know, certainly led by the unanimity of the people being targeted. That's really a stumbling block in some situations. There's a grand jury in San Francisco that is picking up in the post ETA 4 case investigation. ETA 4 was an Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act prosecution that happened in Santa Cruz, culminated in 2008 with a routine dismissal over some very legal minutiae thing, but the state is still trying to follow up on it. The difficulty of doing any kind of public work around in following up in the wake of that, in certainly under the circumstances of a grand jury that's reemerging in conjunction with that same set of events that happened in Santa Cruz, i.e., a campaign against animal researchers that was happening. The difficulty is if the people who are being targeted can't come together and frame their messaging, if people want to deal with it, you know, either limiting their response to social media, or for some reason taking it on more individually, that becomes very difficult to do. So, you know, the media aspect is effective and can play a huge role, and it can also buttress or encourage people who are maybe think they're functioning on an individual level from functioning in a clearer, more collective and public way. And so then the media aspect of it can amplify on that. And it can, as we can see, reframe things. I think in the Chicago 23 case that people spoke to earlier is another good example where the unity of the people being targeted was amplified through the level of communication and the political messaging that came out of really a grassroots media campaign. On the web, you know, people traveling, media exposure, and all that other stuff. We have the capacity to do that because the skills are in our community. And, you know, all of that can build as part of a coming together and strengthening a movement. When a movement has been weakened by repression, those people who consider themselves to be part of that political force need to see this as a teaching moment, as an organizing moment, and then media becomes a component of that. That's why our being here is so significant, because, you know, just our presence alone speaks to a willingness of people to fight back and resist. And, you know, where we go from there and how we organize ourselves to increase our impact remains to be seen. But this is hopeful right here. Just the fact that on a Sunday morning there's like however many of us there are. So let me defer to you, Christian, and then we'll open it up, right?
My thoughts on this are a bit scattered since I found out that I was going to be on this panel about 5 minutes ago. So bear with me. I think a lot of my current research has been focused on counterinsurgency, which is a body of military theory about how to prevent and put down rebellions. And in the counterinsurgency literature, the military talks about the taking control of the narrative. And they don't just mean that in terms of the media as, you know, newspapers and television and that sort of thing, although they do also mean that. But they really treat that notion of there being a sort of dominant story of how people understand the conflict as a terrain of struggle. And that it's something that the rebels and the authorities fight over to try to control the story that people tell about how the conflict is unfolding. And I think that's a helpful way of thinking about it. And the reason it's important to try to make our story available to people is because the way people understand it will shape the legitimacy or lack of legitimacy that the state enjoys. It will shape whether people consider the... this goes beyond, I think, any particular case. It's not just the people will... It doesn't just threaten whether people will think that the state is playing fair ball in this particular, like, grand jury hearing or this particular trial or whatever. If we do it right, by showing the political nature, by showing the repressive nature, by showing the way that the state's actions preserve social inequality, I think it draws into question the legitimacy of the state altogether. So part of the overall game of resisting repression is to find a way to take the state's strength and use it to undercut its legitimacy, use it against itself, so that the coercive the coercive mechanisms that they do more or less monopolize become a political liability for them. I don't think that only happens in the media, but if we can use the media to take control of that narrative and to attack the state's legitimacy, I think we should. I'll leave it to others to decide how well the Committee Against Political Repression has done that or not. But part of our... in one way, we got lucky in that the U.S. attorney and the FBI raided these three homes in Portland, handed out a handful of grand jury subpoenas, and basically didn't say anything about it, which meant that there was this news story of these FBI raids that the FBI wasn't saying anything about, which meant that the story that we told was the story. And they left an opening there that we very cautiously but aggressively stepped into. And so the story that we've tried to tell about this is the state wants people to look at the criminal justice system as being mostly this question of like enforcing the law and stopping crime and that sort of thing. And we're reshaping that as being mostly about politics. And we're stressing not just the like the, well, what they refer to as like the criminal aspects of the investigation of like, you know, some windows got broken and it's really important that, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars be invested in finding the people who broke these windows, but that instead that we look at, you know, why the state thinks that that investment is worthwhile, and that being because those windows were broken for political purposes, and that being because they, and, you know, and some interesting things have come from this, including the fact that the investigation into the scene of anarchists that are under fire here started before those windows were even broken. And I think that, you know, that, again, begs some questions as to how the state identifies its enemies. So shifting the narrative from a criminal justice frame to a political frame has been important to us. Humanizing at present, the people who have been subpoenaed, but we're expecting we'll probably have to do the same thing when indictments come out, so that they're not these, like, shadowy, terroristic, like, anonymous forces of evil, but are instead, like, charismatic young people holding their pets in the pictures. It is embarrassingly cute, the pictures of, like, all of them holding their fucking cats. And then also, one of the objectives here is that we recognized that one of the ways that grand juries are useful for the state is that they are very opaque and they create a bunch of suspicion and they, like, really let rumor, like, get out of control. And we wanted to use our press strategy to make the process of the grand jury investigation as transparent as we can. So we've been trying to put we've been as upfront as we can be about who has received subpoenas and when they are appearing and what their strategy is for resisting and what happens in the grand jury room and all of that kind of stuff. Partly because, we want to showcase their resistance, and partly because we want to do as much as we can to fight bad rumor with good information. And partly because we just want to demystify the whole process and make it, like, as apparent as we can how it unfolds and what it, like, the kinds of questions that people are being asked, and, that it isn't just this black box that people disappear into and, like, are never heard from again. I'll leave it to others to decide how well we've done that, but that is some of the thinking that went into the strategy as it's unfolded. And I'll stop there so we have time for questions.